Live from the Findlay Toyota Studios, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, here we go. Cofield and Company on this Thursday. A good show on the way. So we got a lot of NBA talk. Griffin is here. He's the company. It's Cofield. Findlay Toyota Studios. Plenty of NFL, too. Lots of OTAs. It felt like the Raiders were the only team in camp, along with a couple other teams. So we got some news out of Raiders camp and then news out of some other camps and some crazy stuff being set out there, declarations about quarterbacks that people don't want, quarterbacks that they do want. So that's all coming up. But we're heading to what I think is another coronation, at least conference final coronation, conference champion coronation. We just had to go down the last couple days with OKC, right? The Thunder, take care of business, blow the hell out of the T-Wolves last night. Now, I believe that's a true coronation because I think OKC is in a position to win the title this year and multiple years. Now, I don't think the Pacers are as set up as OKC, but here's the positive for Indy fans and Pacer fans. The East is very much in flux. And we've seen the Knicks are flawed. They've got to make some changes to their roster. Got to get better defensively. The team we thought could go on a run, well, injuries change everything. I mean, the same thing would change for the Pacers, right? Knock on our countertop here. Same thing would change with the Pacers if Halliburton went down. So, bottom line, Eastern Conference is going to be very much up for grabs. A lot of question marks. This offseason of Giannis is going to decide a lot, which we'll get into that whole angle of where should Giannis go because he's leaving Milwaukee. Curtis Terry, our NBA insider, is going to join us in a couple of minutes. So if the Pacers can close things out, can put the dagger in the Knicks, it's a coronation of sorts that they are a team to watch. I don't think they're going to win the title. And you know, we may look back, what is this, May 29th, we may be here, you know, on June 15th going, all right, Cofield, you're a moron because you just assume that Halliburton and the Pacers can't win the title and OKC was going to roll to it. I do think they are going to roll to it. I think the games will be in that series will be a lot more competitive, but it is cool for the Pacers because, again, this is another team that didn't, organization that didn't cry in its beer, right? Didn't piss and moan about being a mid-sized market, didn't whine like some people want to do when you don't win the lottery. You just go to work. You make good trades. You know, they traded an asset in Sabonis to get Halliburton. Halliburton for that organization is a much better match. I like Sabonis, but I don't think with Sabonis they're here. Pacers also draft brilliantly. You know, they're often in that area of, you know, 10th pick onto the 22nd pick, right? And they keep coming up with guys. You may not know them, and then you look them up, and you're like, oh, okay, that guy was the end of the first round. He was an early second rounder. They got him from another organization. You know, Miles Turner was one of the guys who was a high pick. But the way the Pacers have put this together is very OKC-like. And we know how OKC built this thing through a really good trade. You know, there's a lot of cases you can look over the last 15 years where a Paul George got traded and what looked like a salary dump, looked like, hey, let's move him to where he wants to go and move him to a major market. And the little guy, in this case, gets nothing because they can't execute well on the draft picks. Well, consistently, Sam Presti and OKC have nailed the draft pick. So I'm really excited for what's going on right now. I think this is one of the changing of the guard. I don't think these are guaranteed to be the two teams moving forward. I think OKC has a really good shot. But I think the finals are going to be great because now the way this is set up is you have this offensive juggernaut. And again, the Knicks are not done. Maybe the Knicks make a miraculous run here. I don't think they can do it for three games. But you've got what looks like an offensive juggernaut led by a really good player who's very efficient, good shooters around him, pretty good bigs, against what might be one of the better defensive teams of, we'll just limit it to like the last 5 or 10 years. We don't have to start doing the all-timer thing. So to me, it sets up awesomely. And, you know, last night, OKC got the job done again, win over the T-Wolves. I mean, that wasn't much of a fight on the Wolves' part. And it's a little alarming. I think they've got some leadership and character things to clean up in the offseason. It doesn't mean that Anthony Edwards is a crumb or other guys on the team have to go. They do have to rebuild that team a little bit. I liked what Anthony Edwards said afterwards. First of all, he said something. He didn't no-show it. He's been a little prickly, not necessarily with the media, but with the NBA media policies. But I like what he said afterwards. After a series that was okay, not great, still averaged over 20 points a game. His three-point shooting was not great, and he is one of the best three-point shooters in the league. He only shot 27%. But he talked about, hey, I'm not, you know, broken or sad about this. He's like, whoa, he doesn't care. No, that's what he said was, I'm not hurt by this. I'm hurt for guys like Mike Conley, who's old, long in the tooth. I like that. You know, that's kind of the role as a leader, and especially as a young guy, you recognize that, hey, I'm going to have a lot more chances. I don't need to sit here and weep and be all sad and mopey and whatever, non-communicative to the media, sulk. Keep the chin up, be a leader, talk about the rest of the team. But what they've got set up, I think, is going to be really interesting here because they've got good building blocks. And the more I think about it, I don't love Julius Randle, but I actually think they got the better end of the deal with Randle versus Cat. Well, they have some tradable assets, and we'll get into this. Curtis Terry is going to join us, and we'll talk about the offseason for the Wolves. But really the story tonight is, can Tom Thibodeau come up with some sort of game plan to counter Rick Carlisle, who has better personnel and has outcoached him, and Tibbs is trying lots of things defensively. He just can't come up with anything because to compete and score enough against the Pacers, he's got to have Karl Anthony Towns and Brunson on the floor. And to this point, the Pacers have kind of murdered both of those guys. When you have two guys that you can take advantage of in mismatches, that's a big problem. Now, the real interesting thing here is, because no one's going to sit here and break down the basketball like we've been doing the last couple days, you have to go to the stars and you have to find a villain, right? Like, I'm not coming out here and blasting Anthony Edwards. All of a sudden, a guy who was thought of as super clutch, an MVP candidate, man, he's saving the Knicks, maybe the roster just isn't that good, he's freaking carrying them. And all of a sudden now, Brunson is getting beat up in New York and then by Heat fans, you know, a guy like Dan Le Batard, who does his show out of South Florida, he's going after Brunson.
Brunson's the liability in this series. He's the liability because a player that size can't win, at least in part because, and certainly now more than ever, he can't guard. The bigger guys aren't scared of him. And so he becomes just an unbelievable weakness.
He's a weakness on defense. The losses in the series, three of them, he scored, I think, 31, 36, 43. He's doing what he can. It is also the job of a coach. If you have one of your leaders, a scoring point guard who's around 6'1", you've got to find other ways to protect him. And that goes to management, too. And when they moved on from Hartenstein onto Cat without much backing, Mitchell Robinson's okay, but without a whole lot of great rim protectors, well, that presents a problem for the Knicks. So I'm not going to sit here and blame it on Brunson. I think he'll have a monster game tonight. I do not think the Knicks are going to do what the Wolves did last night, just basically fold the tents and fall down. I mean, you can mention all the scores. We finished the show, and I looked down. It was like 36-14, and the ESPN national announcers were like, this thing is freaking over. So basketball is all about adjustments. In the offseason, this is going to be a monstrous offseason. There will be a lot of teams looking to compete, both in the East and the West. Giannis is going to decide a lot based on just which conference he goes to. And by the way, we're right in the middle of this with the WNBA. The Aces are in a transition period, and the transition is going to happen during the season. They're expected to beat teams like the beat-up LA Sparks and Kelsey Plum, who they decided to move on from. Sparks are here. We got tickets for it. Right now, caller 7-364-1100, 364-1100. Tickets are in the ESPN Fan Zone. That is brought to you by Westar Credit Union and the Richard Harris Law Group. If you don't win these tickets, you can get them at AXS.com. It's this Friday. That's tomorrow. This Friday, 7 o'clock start. And you qualify for a chance to win a pair of those official Asia Wilson A1s. Very cool sneakers. Go check them out. I know they come in three different varieties, but we're going to be giving away a pair of those. But right now, the pair of tickets, Griffin's got you all set up. Caller 7-364-1100.
Former UNLV Rebel and host of the Uncommon Terry podcast, Curtis Terry joins Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Cofield and Company rolling on. All right, let's bring in Curtis Terry as we get into what's going on with one of the conference finals decided, the other one potentially Dunsky tonight. What's up, CT?
How much, Pete? How's it going, man? How are you?
Pretty good, man. I'm excited. I think we're looking at potentially a new era in the NBA with a dominant franchise in OKC. We can break that down. I'm not sure what the Pacers are. I know right now the Pacers are just about impossible to stop for this Knicks team, the way they defend and with their personnel. What has been the problem with the Knicks on D?
They're just not a very good defensive team, I think, as a whole. And obviously everybody's talked about Coach Carlisle kind of isolating and head-hunting Jalen Brunson in the pick and roll. If you put him and Kat in the pick and roll, that's not a very good two-man defensive duo. But I think it's even more – it's more telling what Coach Carlisle is doing with the Pacers in terms of how they play and how they've been playing over the last handful of years in terms of just letting Halliburton get the ball, letting them get out in transition and playing fast, and just looking to pick apart the defense. And it doesn't matter for them, and we've seen this and people have been talking about it. For them, it's not about who gets the credit, who gets the stats, as long as they're successful on offense. And they've got so many different weapons. But if you sleep on Halliburton, you let him get going, you don't respect his jump shot because of his form or because it's funky and has a hitch. I mean, but what he did the other night in 30, 15, and 10, and no turnovers, and just dominating really the whole game from start to finish. They're a team that's really just primed to be playing fast, open court basketball. And they've got some high flyers and top end, and they got guys that can knock down shots. They're feisty. They get after it, and they're just playing some really carefree, fun basketball. But I also got to think that we can't forget that last year they were in the conference finals as well. So this is not uncharted territory for them. Right. I think they got there last year. They saw what they could do. Now they're back here this year knowing what they need to do to be able to take that next step.
What do you think of all the Jalen Brunson bashing?
I understand it. I think it holds some merit. Some of it doesn't. Obviously, Jalen Brunson is not a guy that they want to be playing a lot of defense. He's not a defensive stopper. He's an undersized, small scoring point guard. And so he's supposed to come out there and score. And that's what he does. And he does it at a very high elite level in the NBA. But for them to expect that he's going to come out there and get a lot of stops, especially against a taller, bigger guard with such a skill set like Halliburton, I think it's unrealistic. But again, in the NBA, they do a good job of headhunting and identifying and isolating mismatches and matchups. And they're doing a good job of putting him in the pick and roll and just making him at everybody else's mercy. And it's unfortunate it's not working out for him. But I think a lot of that comes on to the makeup of their team, and he's really the only guy that can create and that can score consistently for this team. I think then that's where they have trouble, because when he's on offense and scoring, they can isolate and focus on him, and then they make him work on both ends of the floor defensively, put him in the blender, and there's just not much he can do.
Let's say the Knicks lose this series. What do they do looking forward to kind of make up for the Karl-Anthony Towns move? He is a good player. But he's not great defensively, especially when you drag him out to deep water. So what kind of personnel do they need to have to make sure that they can play Cat and Brunson at the same time? Because right now they can't.
Yeah, it's going to be tough to do. I mean, in terms of how they're doing it, I mean, they obviously went to Mitchell Robinson, try to get some more size out there to put Cat more at that natural spot at the four for him. But again, you're losing some of that versatility defensively. I think you've got to find somebody that's able to not only handle the ball, to knock down shots, but to defend and can get up and down the floor in transition. And Cat does some of those things, but just not at an elite enough level consistently and the athleticism. But he also likes to float away from the basket. So I think they're going to have to do something to get creative, because obviously they gave up a lot to be able to go get Mikal Bridges, who I think is good for them, but I just don't think that they've got the right chemistry and makeup of personnel around this group right now. And then the other thing that we've seen is that they're very limited in terms of their depth. Besides McBride coming off the bench, they just don't have many guys that they can go to that can give them enough different looks. And I think that's where they're really, really struggling, because then you see the Pacers, they've got a kitchen cabinet full of different types of ingredients that they can throw at you to really make life hell for you on both ends.
Curtis Terry, the former Rebel, is up on Cofield and Company. Of course, he's one of the voices on radio for Running Rebel Games and the co-host of the Josh Pastner radio show. So the Knicks are showing, hey, you got to play defense against this Pacers team. Flip side in the West, OKC is riding a lot on its defense. They're awesome. They have depth. They have versatility. I feel like the league is very cyclical, and for a while there, everyone had this desire to have like a big three, and now it's been reduced to a big two. Is this potentially, if OKC wins, and a lot of it's because of their defense, is this going to usher in an era where people actually do try to team build with more balance? Yeah, you need scoring. You probably need some stars, but if you can't play defense, you can't stop the best.
Yeah, and I think we're getting into that kind of that new era, that window of the NBA not having as many like mega superstars, right? I think obviously when you had all these guys, when we were getting to the big three, when it started with LeBron and D Wade and Chris Bosh, and you start going through this, and you talk about KD and Steph and all these guys and the different kind of groups that we had. I think now what guys are starting to see, and you got to give a lot of credit to Sam Presti, what he did with OKC, but what he's learned throughout his 10 years, you've got to be able to draft really, really good. And so if you can withstand going a couple years of having some down years, but drafting really good, but also developing your players like OKC has done in terms of what they've gotten so far in the course of Dagenault, what is now in his fifth year in charge from where they were winning 20 games, now winning fifth most games all time in a regular season. It's about them drafting good, giving development, and allowing their guys to go through that process and just kind of sticking to your guns. And I think we're seeing them see a lot of teams starting to do that. So that's why you're seeing teams starting to stockpile draft picks, not really necessarily to go and use them to trade as trade bait, but really to draft off those guys and then pick and choose who they want, how they want to build their roster. Because right now, with what OKC's done, what the Pacers have done, it's really a youth movement right now. You got to have a lot of young guys that are consistently growing and have that potential. Keep them together and see what you can happen and see what can do. Because right now you're losing a lot of those old super megastars that we're seeing with LeBron on his way out, with KD on his way out, and such.
Back to looking ahead. So Minnesota loses, not much of an effort. They set up OKC to go to the finals. Looking ahead with that team, Anthony Edwards, I thought, got a lot of bashing, and we tried in conversation to come up with all these different angles, and I thought the only one that really sticks for me, if you're going to get after Anthony Edwards, is his basketball maturity on the floor. Like, how much does he have to kind of grow up and recognizing what he needs to do, what adjustments he needs out there to actually be a leader of a championship team?
I think that just kind of comes with earning your stripes, right, and kind of going through the process. I think with Anthony Edwards, I mean, a guy like him, he's we got to keep in mind, he's only 23 years old. And so for him to have all this pressure, you've got to be able to lead a team to the NBA Finals, and it's like, he's 23. So for what he's done right now with not having a lot of help up there, and then kind of rebuilding this thing on the fly, and to trade away his sidekick last year in Cat, and then have to figure out who they are with Julius Randle coming in, but then to be able to knock off the teams that they have and to get back to the Western Conference Finals, he's doing everything that he can, but he's also the kind of – he seems to me like the kid that's going to go in there and put in the work, because he's shown a lot of growth from when he was in that 1 year at Georgia to where he is now in course of his NBA career. And I think they just got to continue to kind of nitpick and massage this thing to get the right pieces with him. But I think he's heading in the right direction. But I think for anybody saying that he's not mature enough, well, again, he's 23 years old. So I think he's probably a lot more mature than some of us were had we had, hundreds of millions of dollars at 23 years old. So I think he's doing a good job. And the pressure that's on him, he's coming out, he's performing. And so I think he's in a position where he's going to continue to have success. He's motivated for the right reasons. And you also just take some time. You got to go through these hard periods and learning curves. You got to take your bruises before you can ultimately get to the top of the mountain and have that success.
The best angle for getting after Anthony Edwards was thrown out by Kendrick Perkins. I'm not sure if you heard this one, but let's play it for you and the audience.
Now, if you go down the list of all the faces of the league in the history of the game, you look at Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, Shaq, LeBron, Steph. What did they all have in common? They all were family men. They all were married with kids. This is facts. This is not something that I'm making. Hold on. But this is not something that I'm making up.
Curtis, those are facts. Your reaction?
They are facts. But I would go out on a limb and say that none of them were married with families and kids at 23 years old. And we're in the position to have the type of success and the star power on them that Anthony Edwards has. Obviously, when LeBron came in at 18, that was a little different. But I'm pretty sure that Jordan wasn't in that same position. Larry Bird, Magic, all these guys, Kobe, that we're listing, I don't think that they were in the same type of area that Anthony Edwards is in terms of their family and kind of their star power. But also, it's 2025, and people are doing things a lot different these days. Obviously, there's been some concerns and talks about Anthony Edwards' personal and private life off the court. I think it's unfair for people to mention that stuff, But what he's doing right now, and I think in due time he will get there. But if that's what it takes to be the face of the league, then I think it's unfair prerequisites or requirements that we're putting on people, because that's just not everybody. They don't all see that same way or want to live their life that same way. But I think for Perk to go out there and say that, I understand what you're saying. It fits your narrative, but I don't think it's actually factual in terms of that's what you have to be the face of a league.
CT is with us, Curtis Terry. A little college basketball. Your reaction to news today that the NCAA president wants to push the tournament from 72 to 76 teams, and like now?
I mean, I get it, right? There's been talk about this for a while. We all know what the main reason is. You're trying to increase revenue ultimately at the end of the day, raise that bottom line. I think the interesting thing is last year you get the SEC that comes out and Florida wins the national championship. They get 14 teams in. Now there's talk about them wanting to get 16 teams into the tournament this coming season. New Texas coach Sean Miller, Texas coach Sean Miller said there's going to be some pushback on that, just because in terms of guys not having those extra years from the COVID year and have a lot of fifth year guys. But I think the interesting thing to note is that the Big 12 and the ACC are now moving back to 18 regular season games in conference, with the idea to be able to get a bye, but to be able to kind of massage their schedule so that way they can get more teams in. Ultimately, to me, I think if you want to expand the tournament, that's great. But the reason should be doing it to get more of those quality teams that should be getting in from some of those smaller schools that kind of get snubbed. And in the article that came out about President Baker making this decision was about St. Louis last year, Indiana State, when they come out and they don't get in the tournament, but then they go on that deep run in the NIT. That's a team that you want to be able to get in the tournament, not necessarily expanding it, and then you're getting more of these Power Four schools into it. Even though they've got the resume, they've got the name brand, but their wins and losses aren't there just because they're a better team because they've been in a harder conference. So I think that's where we're going to get a lot of this is going to come down to right place, right time. Some of these bigger conferences, bigger schools are going to win out at the end of the day, but I think that's unfortunate because I think the NCAA tournament is one of the purest forms of competition. But if you just give the bigger schools with the bigger budgets and the more opportunities to get in there, it's going to take and eliminate some of those smaller schools, which obviously is everybody's concern when you talk about college football playoff expansion and how this thing's going to move forward in terms of college athletics in the landscape.
Well, Curtis, I'm glad you had a couple minutes for us. I guess, are you going to run back to watch some college softball, or what's going on?
You mean, you know it, man. Before we hopped on with you guys just an hour ago or so, I'm sitting here and I'm watching Tennessee versus Oklahoma. Obviously, what Coach Patty Gasso has done with OU is phenomenal. They've won 8 national championships. They've won 4 in a row, trying to go for 5 in a row. They're down all game 3-1, bottom 7, 2 out, runners on the corners. Ella Parker comes up and smashes her second home run to dead center, walk off. And it's just electrifying. You talk about the NCAA tournament is good, but anybody that doesn't watch the Women's College Softball World Series, do yourself a favor. Watch it this weekend. It's great entertainment from the athletic standpoint of women's sports.
Damn. All right. Hard pitch. Good sell. I better get on it. All right, CT. We appreciate it, buddy. Thank you.
Yes, sir. We'll talk to you guys soon.
Curtis Terry, one of the voices of UNLV basketball, played for the Rebels on the way back. Rebel football schedule is out. We'll talk about some of the changes, slight changes, movement of games, some interesting spots for the Rebels on the football season.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
College football right around the corner. I'm going to say it every day. About 93 days until openers, something like that. Schedules coming out, official schedules. We know who teams are playing. Don't exactly know the TV spots, and they change the times on us a little bit. So UNLV out with its schedule. Interesting on a couple of fronts. I think a positive. I don't know. You tell me, Griffin. Friday night football for Division I football players. You played. You guys get fired up about that on a short week? Because I think, you know what, even before I ask you, I have to say again, there are high hopes for Dan Mullen. But one of the things that Barry Odom was unbelievable at is they dealt with the punches. As they got more popular, and then, you know, you had some scheduling conflicts with the Raiders, they had a lot of Friday games the last couple of years. And they came through those Friday games for the most part swimmingly. Like, Friday games are not easy.
They're not easy. It's less prep time. You don't have, you know, the same amount of time to prep for a team, but at the same time,
injuries, recovery.
Absolutely. But at the same time, there's something about playing on Friday night. There's something, it goes back to playing in high school. You know, you get the playing on Friday right before the start of the actual weekend. All the focus is on the game itself, of course, but then it's like once you get that game done, especially if you go in there, you perform well, you have a win, you got the weekend to look forward to, you know, you got a little bit more prep time for the next game after that. But I think that Friday games can be a challenge for a team for sure, but the players themselves, they shouldn't have an issue going out there and feeling the excitement on playing.
I love where the two Friday games, as of now, I have a feeling there might be a third. But as of now, looks like it's officially locked in. First Friday game is at the beginning of the season. So, you know, there is no game before that. You're not coming off a short week. They're going to start camp early to get ready for that August 29th game at Sam Houston. That'll be on CBS Sports Network. Two home games following. That one, September 6th, September 13th. UCLA, Idaho State, UCLA games on CBS Sports Network. Fourth game of the year, still TV to be decided. On the road Saturday, Miami of Ohio. Then a bye. I like that. Four games in, bye. At Wyoming, CBS Sports the following Saturday. Then October 11th, Air Force here. At Boise State, not the easiest deal there because Air Force will beat the hell out of you even if they're not what they have been, and I think they will have a big bounce back. Air Force will. But playing that offense, getting chopped left and right, it's a very physical game. Then the next game's at Boise, and we'll see where that one lands. Time to be determined. Just says Fox Networks. Could they get a bigger spot if both teams are rolling along? Maybe. Then a bye. Okay. So you're going to get beat up against Boise State. Back-to-back weeks with Air Force. Then a bye. Then New Mexico at home at CSU, which I think will not be easy. That's on November 8th. They play every Saturday. Check that. They play every week in November. Then two home games, Saturday and a Friday. That's the other Friday game. It's very close to the end of the season. Ninth Island Challenge. We were telling you about this on social media that Raiders play on the 23rd, Sunday, 1:05 against the Browns. They're not going to – with the stadium inner workings, it's not going to happen where the Raiders are going to be cool turning around the field in less than about 24 hours. So that game's going to be on Friday night, 7:30 start, FS1, so good TV spot. Be who knows how many, 8,000 to 10,000 Hawaiians there, starting quarterback four. Hawaii is expected to be a kid who played at Bishop Gorman. I think he's going to be a freaking monster two-way threat. And then the final game of the year. It is on TV. We've had cases in the past where there wasn't freaking TV. Luckily, I'm one of the – well, I'll call it a backup plan. Not that there's anything wrong with a triple SEN, but Matt and Everett and I have done games on that one, Reno games, because there was no TV. So that's the way the schedule is right now. Only two Friday games. We'll see what happens with the rest of the TV dates, but I think this thing lays out really nicely. Here we go, yo. Here we go, yo.
So what's the scenario? Lawyer and host of Suit Up News, Xavier Pope, joins Cofield and Company now.
All right, EP is in. Before we even bring him on, I go to his threads every week, really every day, to check things out. It's a hell of a read, except sometimes you're assaulted with some audio that is just, God, play this.
If I go, there's just no telling how far I'll go. I know everybody on this island has a rule on this island. Everything is by design. I know everybody.
All right. I get a little girl. Clearing your throat. What? Okay. I like Disney movies. I like Disney songs a lot, EP, but where did you find that audio video of a little girl singing?
Bruh, it was just on a thread. It looks like a lot of people are now sharing this video. And so this person sung, I guess a little girl sung for 45 minutes.
Right. It was on an airplane, right? I guess there was a delay on the airplane. They're sitting there at the gate and they're like, hey, little girl, why don't you sing?
She started saying, and I think it's cute for the first 4 minutes. That's where Ryan Clark even commented about this. And he said that, he was cute as well. I think everyone is on board. This is cute. But after a while, this is a seventh layer of hell somewhere.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's fine for 15 seconds, but we're all stuck on a plane. the parents need to have a little self-awareness. Get her off the mic. Get her to sit down so the rest of us can have some peace and quiet.
You're on a plane. I think it was time for them to be food Santa Claus. It was time for the girl for singing whole soundtrack.
Xavier Pope was with us. All right. I want to get to some NBA here in a couple minutes, but I got to start with some WNBA, and I know I sent you over some graphics. My God, it has become a cottage industry when the WNBA has some stories where you have some guys out there whose audience are kind of filled with incels and guys are having trouble with women, and between about five of them, they went crazy over Caitlin Clark getting hurt and this whole notion that the league is going to fall apart while Caitlin Clark is down for, you know, 2 or 3 weeks here.
Steve, this is another thing where everyone's assuming rage bait is content. And it's being rewarded. As long as it continues to be rewarded, people are going to kind of chase narratives like caping for Caitlin Clark. When you hate it when it's sports to begin with, you hate it when it's basketball to begin with, hate the WNBA to begin with. It's just another way to display the sexist behavior. And I think the league is definitely Caitlin Clark. She herself said that she's on the shoulders of many other really talented women who played the game before.
So, Griffin, we're getting a little in and out on the audio. Let's get Xavier either on just the hard line for sound or on the phone. Yeah, like I said, today and yesterday, it's been kind of crazy with folks rooting against the Fever now. And, Indiana without Caitlin Clark kind of gave the WNBA haters, or maybe they're just Caitlin Clark lovers, exactly what they needed, because the Fever went out as two and a half point favorites and did not play well at all against the Mystics. Mystics are not very good, although they pushed our Aces right to the brink. But yeah, yesterday, Fever lose on the road as favorites, 83-77. Mystics are getting better, but this is a game they should win. Natasha Howard was fine, but she's much better than just throwing in 11 points without Caitlin Clark. Kelsey Mitchell was the one who had the biggest problem. She finished with 14, but she was also a very inefficient. 2 of 7 from 3 and 4 of 16 overall. So they didn't shoot the ball very well defensively. Not great either. Kiki out of USC went off for 16 points. She's been one of the better rookies in the league at 16 points and 8 rebounds. And Sykes loaded up and had 21 points and 9 rebounds. So, yeah, exactly what the Clark lovers and kind of WNBA haters who were hoping the Fever would fall apart and go, see, they need her. Want to try to bring in EP again?
Want to try to.
We're getting some echo. Okay, that's fine. It happens. We'll effort that. This part of the show is brought to you by our pals at Jackson's Bar and Grill. Jackson's, of course, at 6020 West Flamingo. Top value steak in Las Vegas. It's Jackson's Bar and Grill. If you're going down to the Strip, good pregame and postgame headquarters, pre-concert, post-concert headquarters. Again, just $20 on 2 of their great steaks, a 1-pound ribeye. And the garlic marinated bistro filet. We'll try again one more time with EP. Xavier.
Yeah, what's up, Steve?
Okay, so the I don't know where the source was on this, but there was a claim that there was some sort of racial slur or something that was uncomfortable at the Fever Sky game to open the season. Can we play the sound that we think? Can we play that, Xavier? Let's load this up here in a second. The league did an investigation over about 9 or 10 days and say, hey, we just couldn't find anything, which is fine. They did the investigation. My fear is now, if there are legit incidents in the future, what does that do to claims and legitimacy? Are, you know, people just going to say, oh, it's another fake case here? What was your reaction to the WNBA and the investigation?
Well, that's a great point, Steve, because we are now living in a time where people are openly denying racism, racial discrimination, bigotry, and also treating just looking into it as the racism, the bigotry, the sexism itself. That hampers the ability of a league to come out, even do its due diligence, and then to be believed by anything they would say that would corroborate what happened. Imagine they discovered there was some racial taunt that was were done.
Right.
Then people are mad at the league for finding it out in the first place, Steve.
Yeah. It's a catch 22, but this one came up with nothing. And you know, the weird thing is, I don't think the Sky put in the complaint. I think it was someone on the internet or watching on TV who said they knew what it was, or they thought they heard something. So I guess the league did what it had to do, but puts it in a very weird position. All right. I got to go down the path of Nevada versus the rest of the country. And, you know, I don't know everything about Illinois in terms of freedoms, but for us, legalizing marijuana, both medical and recreational, has worked out. I would love to see the schools funded even more. It's been relatively safe. There's still other states that are very afraid of this, and I think there's other states kind of weaponizing what they think is going to happen and what maybe a couple things that have happened. I watched some press conference today with one of the higher-ups in Texas, and he was lecturing about some weed cookies and flipping out. Texas is going – they're going back in time, aren't they? They're banning the hell out of marijuana now.
It is back in time, and I said to my Threads account, criminalizing marijuana is just another reason to make black and brown people targets. You're living in an era where ICE is involved and a lot of different things that are happening. You want to be able to stop people, stop and frisk, who's championing, hey, bring that back again. There is zero reason to be able to do this other than you're attempting to criminalize other people. And so I think that this rolling back so that you can do some things that you didn't used to be able to do is part of the American politic right now.
Yeah, I saw two comments on the story that were kind of interesting. Xavier Pope is with us. One person said, I don't know if this is factual, look at the states that legalized weed. Student grades fell and college dropout rates skyrocketed. Be careful what you wish for. I haven't heard that in Nevada. Another person said, you know what? In the end, this was the alcohol lobby paying Texas politicians to end cannabis sales because it was cutting into their profits.
A lot of people like crossfading, see, which is known as getting stoned and getting high and getting drunk at the same time.
I know what it is.
Okay, just making sure, you know. But
the my Sundays, we call our Sundays at home "Take Your Medicine Sunday" in many ways.
Crossfade Sunday.
I was trying to be subtle about it. Okay, so we got summer coming up, right? And my girlfriend bought me a sweet. This is my new stuff right here. Now I wear a lot of Hawaiian kind of pattern shirts, big fella shirts. I like them. They make me feel comfortable. I saw that you referenced a list on Threads about what women don't want to see guys wearing. The problem is, as I scroll through it, I'm like, it's everything. They want everything banned. What were the biggest things that you came up with that more women than not said, you know what, guys, don't do this, don't wear this?
Yeah, I definitely saw the bespeckled pants seem to be jeans seem to be a point of contention. Skinny jeans, I guess they don't like skinny jeans. Okay. Unfortunately, I didn't know that people didn't like skinny jeans. Also, overly loafers, no socks. I don't know if that much of a big deal. Dangling earrings seem to be a big one. Some immersed flip-flops and bucket hats, which I also have problems with as well. I have a problem with bucket hats, Steve. I admit.
Okay, well, I'll tell you this. I'm building up a supply of bucket hats. I will wear bucket hats out. I won't wear bucket hats to, like, a nice place. Flip-flops... I actually agree that flip-flops should stay at home and around the pool or at the beach. I will have flip-flops on, and if I have to go to the store, I will put on the shoes. But the problem is, as we look through this, women complaining about guys and what they wear, it was like just about everything. I mean, one of the things I've always heard is, and I'm making the transition, stop with the cargo shorts. So I start buying shorts. Well, they're shorter, and then I saw some woman like, stop with the short shorts. We don't want to see your hairy legs. I'm like, well, what is it? What am I supposed to do?
Yeah, Steve, I think you can dress exactly how you like.
Exactly.
And if your girl likes it, then I love it. I mean, she's making you wear that shirt on air, so clearly it doesn't matter what she thinks.
Well, she didn't. This is also, it's actually like a Jets Hawaiian shirt, So I wore this. It actually arrived today. She had bought it for me. She surprised me. It's a very nice gift. See, that's the difference. Because here's the other part of this that I liked is there was someone under a Planet Rachel on a whole list of what guys shouldn't wear. And she's like, well, she goes, how about the frowns? They should smile more. We can't. We're not allowed to do anything, Xavier. Nothing.
Well, you'll always make sure you get a smile from this mug. But yes. Let the audience know that Steve is being made to wear a shirt on air because his girlfriend bought it for him.
I don't know about being made. I really, Griffin can attest to the fact that Fridays are actually Hawaiian Shirt Fridays, and it's starting to turn into Thursdays as well. I'm ready for the weekend pretty early on. All right, we got like 2 minutes left. One, give me your take on the dislike of SGA for Oklahoma City and the fact that he draws fouls. I grew up in eras where guys who forced fouls, got fouls, right? Not got fouls, but draw fouls was actually a good thing. Like going to the free throw line and getting defenders in foul trouble, good.
Yeah, he's being called the free throw merchant. Yeah. But you know what, though? That was a big thing complained about Michael Jordan talking about the referees in the 90s, that he was getting to the foul line too much. And then about Reggie Miller throwing his hands through the defender to take a shot. So this isn't the first time fans have complained about free throw merchants. This is just the current reiteration of it. And every star is always going to have fans picking at him for trying to game the system to get points for a team.
Why do you think there's been a resistance to say, you know what, this guy Halliburton is a top 10 or top 15 player?
I think he can play for the Indiana Pacers. It's that simple. Paul George played for the Indiana Pacers. Whatever people have with the Indiana Pacers being a good basketball team, people are complaining about it in Oklahoma City, in Indiana Pacers finals. Like, these two aren't the most two exciting teams in the game of basketball. So I think that's where it all stems from, really.
Xavier Pope with us. You can find him up on Threads at Xavier Pope. Anthony Edwards, I thought, was kind of the guy in the semis. And they're not done yet. Knicks Pacers play tonight. But he was the lead player who got beat up the most. I'm not exactly sure why. Are we going to look back at this and go, hey, you know what? This was the pinnacle for Anthony Edwards? Or do you think there's more in here where the T-Wolves maybe do go to a finals in the future?
He's 23 years old, Steve. The guy is unmoved by the fact he has to grow to be a better player. SGA is 27 years old. Was Anthony Edwards better than where SGA was at 23? Absolutely he is. And so I think people have to slow down. He's a very young player, and he has a lot of future ahead of him as a star in the NBA.
I saw your list of iconic 80s movies. I haven't seen all of them. You had Do the Right Thing, Big Trouble in Little China, The Golden Child, Back to the Future 2, Predator. I've seen 3 of 5, so I'll get on these for you. Why are these so special for you?
These are the classics, though. What's your favorite out of that list, Steve?
I don't want to be a cheeseball. You know what it is.
Is it Big Trouble in Little China?
No, it's Back to the Future 2.
I mean, come on. That is my favorite film of all time, Steve. I know that word, that film word for word. It is the greatest film in American cinema history. So we're on board with that. Call us 2 cheese balls together.
There you go. All right. Well, I see you got the muscle tee on, looking good, working out, doing the yoga. I hope the weather stays consistent and warm now the rest of the way for about 3 months in Chicago. We'll see you.
Same. Love you guys.